On the agenda, H Finance and Budget Committee reports, so I will turn it over to Chairman Gary Brody, who's with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our first action item today is the acceptance of the auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2023. I'll now turn it over to Susan to introduce our auditors.
Okay, thank you, Regent Brody. So before I turn it over to our auditors, I just want to say this gives me the opportunity to first say it was another clean audit for the university, which does not just speak to the finance and accounting staff, but the whole university is involved in this. So a clean audit with no audit findings, no audit adjustments, and no past adjustments, which I'm sure Jennifer will address. It's a great audit, and so I want to say my thank you to the accounting and finance staff. So in particular, Ronaldo and Christy and Amy have worked really well with our auditors. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer. This is for business presentation. I do want to say I've worked with Jennifer a long time, back when they were BKD, and she was just recently promoted to partner. So congratulations to Jennifer. So thank you.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate those comments, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today to go over the annual results. I don't know.
Keep going.
Okay. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you. Well, again, appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. I have Sarah Sweat, the manager, on the engagement with me here as well today. So appreciate that. I just have some high-level comments to go over with you on the audit results, as well as some high-level financial statement review and our required communication to you today. So this was our second year, as Susan mentioned, working with Western Kentucky University. So we accomplished our audit plan and timeline, and we did meet the state deadline. So we set a lofty goal this second year, actually trying to be a week early. And so we did meet that goal, take some time to get the report prepared together and everything. So as Susan mentioned, I just would like to thank the team here that they worked with Chrissy, Ronaldo, and Amy, and all of that group, because everybody has the information ready for us when we show up on site to prepare our audit procedures. Would also like to say, you know, I appreciate Western Kentucky University because I have alumni that work on this engagement. So the team at Forvis also appreciates the success of the students here, because those accounting students work with us and help do the audit procedure. So again, a great group to work with, and we have a good communication throughout the process. As Susan mentioned, there were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in internal control or any findings to report to you today. So we did issue an unmodified clean opinion on the financial statements, was what you expect and what you would expect to receive. We did have a new standard that was required adoption during the fiscal year, and that was GASB 96. This related to subscription-based arrangements similar to leases. And so that was a new item that had to be adopted this year. A few of the financial highlights here that I'll touch upon. I will say, with the adoption of the standard, the statements are in a single year presentation due to those requirements of the standard and how you have to adopt that. Management does take a lot of time in preparing the management's discussion and analysis, which is at the very front of the report. So there's 125 pages of this report. It's a lot of information, but that management discussion and analysis really helps prepare some information to analyze from a comparison purposes, because that management discussion analysis will show you the 2022 activity compared to the 2023. So that is very helpful when you have a single year presentation. So some highlights here with the net tuition. As mentioned, from fiscal year 22 to 23, there was a slight decrease in enrollment, so impacting tuition revenue, net tuition revenue, about a 5% decline there, about $4.4 million. Net position is still very strong at $140 million. There was still an increase in total change in net position of $16 million. And then the state appropriations, where this is a significant source of non-operating revenue for the university. And so this was an increase of $7.3 million.
So when did you end your report? In 2023, but this is not all 2023. You're like
June or? It's June. So this is the final June 20, yes, the fiscal year. And so here is a summarized statement of net position. So you'll see here, I apologize, the numbers are probably small on the screen here. So cash and equivalents decreased about $29 million. Most of that was use of HERF money, grant money that was received, but also just a transition to investments. As you all adopted a new investment policy, and so moved some of those cash equivalents into those investments to earn some return during the year. So worked through that process, and so there is a new financial statement line item to show those investments separately there. At the end of the year, it was about $44 million in the investments. You also have your assets held in trust, which stayed fairly comparable to the prior year, those that are held at the foundation and held for the university. You'll see here there's a lease and subscription assets net. So you may recall last year there was a new standard that put basically all leases on your statement of net position. And then now there's a subscription asset. So think of your arrangements with IT and your software. And so basically you have a right to use a software and you have the obligation to pay for that use. So really not a big impact on the change in net position or income or expenses, if you will. It just represents this on your statement of net position to show those obligations. Then the capital assets, consistent with the prior year, somewhat of a change there. The GASB 96, I did note there was about $2.8 million impact on the statement of net position. So total assets and deferred outflows of approximately $659 million there, increase of about $14 million from the prior year. The liability section there shows the lease and subscription obligations that are owed, and then the notes payable. So that reflects the bond issuance that occurred in August of 22. So about $52 million went on the statement of financial position from that issuance that occurred right at the beginning of the fiscal year. Then the pension and OPEB liability increased about $15 million. That is really driven by the actuarial assumptions and those reports that are provided by the state. So that's just information that is provided and that we look at the actuarial assumptions that those actuaries use, as well as the other auditors that perform that allocation report that shows what Western Kentucky University's portion is. So again, as mentioned, total net position about $140 million, so increase from about $16 million over the prior year there. Any questions on this net position and some of the highlights so far? Here gives some financial highlights on the statement of revenues and expenses. The federal and state grants, the decrease there of about $18 million, that is primarily driven by the HERF money. So as that money has now been depleted and utilized, we will start to see that trend back to the normal type of grant revenue numbers that you have seen. Again, total operating revenues stayed very comparable to the prior year. And then operating expenses were increased about $31 million from that. Various items driving that number, pension expenses, and just cost, as everybody knows, the cost of everything has increased. So see that going up during the year. Here is just some financial statement footnote highlights. I won't point you to these in the report themselves. But note 3 does give you a detail of the investments and the fair value disclosure, so that is a new footnote this year to show the types of investments you all are invested in, and there it gives you a fair value disclosure, and that fair value disclosure just helps you show the risk level of your portfolio. So a level 1 is more of your less risky investments up to your level 3, which is a harder to value investment. So just wanted to point you to that. That is a new footnote this year with the investment policy. Note 6 does give you the information for the subscription assets, so you can see the details on that. And then note 9 gives you the lease obligations, our prior capital leases, what we called it. So those give you some more of the details behind those numbers on those obligations. We all are required to do a single audit as well, and so that did get completed during the financial statement audit this year. There were no findings to report, and we did have 5 major programs to test. So we hopefully will see this start to decline again as the COVID money has been utilized, but we did test the Student Financial Assistance Cluster, the Education Stabilization Fund, or HERF, as I referred to, the Child Care and Development Fund Cluster, TRIO Cluster, and the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds. So the government did tell us, they did say that the HERF and the coronavirus funds were high risk, so we were required to test those. They dictate those from a certain level, again, if you make a certain threshold, but the government does say that those are high risk programs. Any questions on the financial statements before I get into the audit communication letter? Okay. Some high-level items here. Again, we have our required communication to you all today. We did issue the unmodified opinion on the financial statements. The significant accounting policies are noted in footnote one, and there were no unusual accounting or alternative accounting treatments that we noted during the audit process. Then I just noted there that there were assumptions that were made with the adoption of GASB 96, so we worked with management with those assumptions there. As mentioned, no alternative accounting treatments. The management's judgments and accounting estimates. So again, there are estimates that are inherent in the financial statements. And so we look at these and base our procedures based on those estimates and the risks that are associated with that. And so again, we look at the defined benefit pension plan and other assumptions that are used for the OPEB liability. We look at the allowance for uncollectible receivables. That is an estimate in the financial statements. Those valuation investment securities, we utilize a third party to help us make sure the valuation of those securities appear reasonable. And then we look at the functional expense allocation in the footnote, and then the GASB 96 items, again, those assumptions made by management. So we had no findings or items to report on those matters, but we do pay particular attention to those during the audit process. Financial statement disclosures, I pointed you to some of the new ones, and then again, GASB 96 is the only one we had noted in our letter. As Susan mentioned, we had no audit adjustments or no past adjustments, so very proud of that process with the team here to not have any adjustments in the audit, the financial statements that were provided to us to audit. And then just the quality of the accounting principles. So again, the new was adopting GASB 96, and any other communications that we had with WKU was the management representation letter. So that is signed by management as we wrap up the audit process. Any questions on that information?
Thank you so much. Susan, I would like to commend you and your staff for a job well done on financial statements. If there are no further questions, I would entertain a motion and a second to accept the auditor's report and the financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2023.
So, Regent Brody, before doing a motion, just to ask a question, just to help us. Susan and her team meet with us quite often. One of the things that we've tried to get a handle on from the board perspective and those of us on the Finance and Budget Committee is how we can, what things we could look at on the fly during the course of the year to give us a perspective as we're progressing through of how we're doing financially or things we should be concerned about so we're not catching it at the end of the year or whatever the case may be. So just to, for external opinion about this, what do you think should be some of those most important numbers or metrics that we should look at?
Good question. Your team does a great job at looking that information. Again, looking at enrollment and those numbers and the budget. I know you guys have a robust budget process to look at that. Again, the grant funding that is received, looking at those and the requirements that are, have to be followed with that grant funding. Again, you have a great team that looks at that information and knows the certain requirements that have to be followed. Internal control processes, that is always something to look at from that standpoint because there's always room for improvement in that, in the process of any cash collections or different items like that. The Department of Ed, it continues to look at items from a student financial aid side. So staying on top of that, I know the team here looks at that. state had, we had new steps that we had to look at. There was incentive comp procedures and some items with agreements. And so the Department of Ed is continuing looking at those agreements. So that would be an area that I would suggest, again, just staying on top of those standards that the Department of Ed issues. And then GASB, unfortunately, is not very calm right now. There are new standards. So there will be a couple other items that we have to discuss. But I also, the finance team talks to us during the year, and that is very, very helpful. And so I think doing that, and so if there's any thoughts about just what can we do differently, or do we need to change some policies or procedures, or can you help us interpret this? With GASB 96, I was talking to the group in May. April and May, so that is very helpful when we kind of know the items that are going on at the university, because we're not here day to day, and so to have that communication with them is very helpful, because then we can help answer the questions on the front end, and so when they're building their analysis and reviews, we can help with some thoughts in the front end versus seeing it on the back end. So like when agreements get signed and we see them after the fact, sometimes we can provide some information on the front end from how the accounting will work if this is the agreement that's signed. So hopefully that was helpful.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Regis, my apologies. It's very difficult to see everybody and their questions when I'm on Zoom. Are there any further questions or comments before we go to a vote? If not, then I would entertain a motion and a second to accept the audit report and financial statements for the year ended June 30, 2023.
So moved.
That was Regent Brinkley. That was Regent Brinkley. Regent Spiller, a second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed by like sign. All right. Thank you. Our next action item is to accept for filing the statement of revenues and expenditures for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2023 and 2022. Susan?
So, again, this is the first quarter budget versus actual for the new fiscal year, and this is the total revenue. So you'll see that our overall, our total revenue is 39% budget as compared to 38% in the prior year. So at this point, over prior year, we're about $3.5 million or 2.8% higher. I think most of that is reflected in your, if you look directly at your net tuition revenue, which is even more good news around our enrollment. So you'll see where our net tuition revenue has gone from 47% of total of budget to 50% of budget. So again, this is just, again, a little bit more on net tuition revenue. The fall tuition revenue, as compared to budget, exceeded the overall budget, and that was due to the increase in the freshman class and the overall enrollment. We fully expect for the spring to exceed budget as well because of the retention efforts on campus. And then going to the other revenue categories, state appropriation is, while we're at 30% of budget, is down slightly over prior year, and that has to do directly with a slight decline in performance funding for the university. Grants and contracts are higher primarily due to the federal Pell and CAP program, and then also the KIA Innovative Scholarship Pilot Program for refugees on campus. The other revenue category is higher primarily because of the new investment policy that we have in place and the banking contract, the new banking contract that we've signed, we have the signing bonus. And auxiliary is a slightly lower, and that has to do with just some timing having to do with the Aramark contract. We will recognize that revenue in the second quarter. So that's all I have on revenue. Any questions on revenue from any of the committee members? This is what the total expenses for the university looks like in the first quarter. So the personnel section is trending as we would expect within budget. We're about 24% budget in current fiscal year as compared to 23%. That's primarily due to the salary increase that we had in place and some other compensation adjustments. Other direct expenses, the other financial assistance category that's directly related to the revenue item that I talked about earlier, the increase in the Pell and CAT program and that KIA Innovative Scholarship Program. I can't overstate what Jennifer just talked about, the increase in the supply and operating expenses. From everything we can tell when we dig down deeper into the detail, most of that is just due to fixed cost increases and increased cost within the area of inflation. The good news of this part of the report is maintenance, utilities, and travel are down pretty significantly over prior year. I asked Ronaldo to check with Brian on the utilities to make sure that that wasn't a timing issue. But in fact, we are seeing a decline in utilities, which is excellent news given inflation, primarily because of favorable weather conditions. But we will continue, as I told the board when we presented the budget, is monitor the inflationary increases throughout the year. So that's all I have on the first quarter budget presentation. Any questions?
So I'm thinking on the inflation, and I know you presented last year's budget to us. You talked about setting up separate index numbers to track inflation, and you did that reported to us. And so, and we know what the inflationary impact was last year, and now we're trying to reconcile that in the budget. How are we going to handle that? We see inflationary impacts this year, and how that's going to impact us over the course of the year. Are we going to be increasing the budget finally in those areas next year? Because if we don't have deflation, we keep tracking it. Eventually, we've got to just make it a part of what we're doing, part of what the budget is.
Well, I mean, some of it, Shane, we're just now getting into the new development of the 25 budget. So we'll have to see what we do going forward and recommendations that come out of the Budget Executive Committee. We're hopeful through the new legislative process that the President might want to speak to this some, is that our discussions with the CPE right now includes a request into the legislative session for inflationary dollars that would go directly into the base. So rather than all of our money going into performance funding, which is one time in nature, not permanent, we would actually get an influx of permanent dollars into our budget to address some of the inflationary issues. So.
Yeah, I've talked about this on a few occasions publicly. We're not to the session yet, but it's important to recall, and I'll begin with I'm thankful for what the legislature did in the last session, last budget session, where we had an increase in dollars in performance funding. We had dollars given to us for asset preservation and a capital investment of $75 million more than the College of Business building. All that's wonderful, but none of it can help with inflation. The state legislature gave increases to K-12 education to state employees. We were not included in that. And so during the past 6 months, Jennifer Smith and I have had robust conversations with our regional delegation, South Central Kentucky, but also others in leadership around how might we mitigate some of the inflationary challenges that we're facing as universities. This is not just WKU, right? This is all the state institutions, but it's also a national conversation. So as we developed our legislative agenda for the session, the CPE and the university presidents together have put together a request around increase to base, which we have not had in a very long time. And I walked through this yesterday with colleagues at Faculty Senate. The challenge around salary increases and the challenge around increasing budget is that because the state has only invested in performance funding, which were one-time dollars, we don't have the ability to use those for salary increases. CPE has constrained our ability to increase tuition to what's been since I've been here, less than 2% a year, averaging about 1.5, 1.7%. That's the only revenue increase other than increases from enrollment that you can apply to salary increases because they're permanent dollars. and also permanent expenses. And so I'm hopeful that we'll get some relief from the legislature. We've had positive conversations. I think they understand the issue because they feel inflation personally when they go to the grocery store, and so it makes sense for them. But we're not going to have base increases for multiple years in a row. We're asking for year one and year two in the budget cycle, and then we'll see where we are. If we were able to get that, that creates an opportunity for us to mitigate some of the expense challenges around inflationary pressures on facilities, maintenance, and stuff, but also would give us a chance to do some significant adjustment work on faculty and staff salaries. So that's a really positive opportunity. I promise nothing in the next legislative session. We'll see how all that matters is how it ends.
Are there any other questions or comments before we put this to a vote? If not, I would entertain a motion and a second to accept the following the statement of revenues and expenditures for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2023 and 2022.
Regent West is trying to move.
Lip reading count.
There's a problem with the audio, but it's obvious that Regent West is trying to make that motion. I can read the lips well enough to know that. So you have a motion, Chairman Brody.
Okay, we have a motion. Do I have a second? I'm sorry. It must be freezing up on my end. I can't hear anything.
I will second.
Regent. You have a second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Our third item is to approve a revision to the 2023-2024 operating budget. Susan?
Okay, this is the, we're actually getting this to you earlier than we have in the past. We typically, because of the audit process and all of that, we usually don't bring this in to you until the December. So this will be good news, particularly for the academic units, that we can get these funds, estimate of these funds into their budget. So this is the carry forward from the previous fiscal year. Basically, carry forward is it's allocated based on the approved carry forward policy. And just so everyone understands, carry forward is not revenue. It's simply funds that are generated by revenue exceeding budget or underspending the expenditure budget. So keep in mind that these are one-time funds, and so they cannot be used to create permanent positions or make permanent personnel adjustments. These are one-time in nature. These are the dollars that we're requesting the Finance Committee to recommend, $18.2 million back to all. This is strictly on the academic side of the university. So for the course and program fees, F&A and state mandated programs, about $9.4 million. Revenue dependent departments, about $8.4 million. And the FUSE and RCAP grants and grad research grants about $472,000. So for a total of about $18.2 million. So Regent Brody, that's all I have. If there's I'll entertain questions.
Okay, yes, questions or comments from anyone?
I have a question. I'm really trying to understand how all this falls, and I want to tell you all I've worked on this for a week or so, and I'm trying to understand it. I just want to be sure before I make any kind of vote. When we talk about a revision to the budget, the operating budget, are we talking about a revision to the 389,944 that the board approved?
Yes.
Okay. Does that mean that then that budget becomes plus 18, so it's 408,187,603 instead of 389?
Yes.
Okay. So just for clarity then, if that's the budget, then do departments budget their underspend to the new budget or the old budget?
So what we're thinking about doing this year, David, I mean, that's a good question, is that because carry forward dollars are not revenue, we've talked about, is there a way, and they're one-time dollars, so we don't want our academic deans are very smart, intelligent people, but for accounting purposes, is there a way for us to segregate those differently within our general ledger so they don't get commingled with the permanent dollars, and so that everybody can account for them differently? So these are one-time dollars. They may sit in a different part of the ledger than your permanent dollars so that they don't get commingled together. That could have been some of the confusion in the past. I don't know that, but Ronaldo, is that fair to say that we're still looking at ways that we can budget those within the ledger?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I'll add to that. I think that's absolutely the right question. Because one of the challenges we've seen with that overspend from last year is in the previous 5 years, we had spent between 90 and 92% of actual revenue. Last year, we went over that. Making it clearer for budget managers and those who have budget responsibility, that don't look at your total budget. Look at your annual recurring budget, and then to the side, here is a set of dollars you can use for one-time things, but you cannot use that as if it were part of the overall budget. So I think that's part of the learning process for RAMP and for the budget managers as well. So I think it's a great point.
And because you mentioned that, I have a follow-up. That brings the other question that I think is a logical question that I'm still struggling with when I think about these numbers, and I'm really trying. I want to stress that. Could we say that the underspend over the last, I believe there was 6 years cited in some document that I read, is tied to the fact that carry forward was readily available, and people use that as part of what they would normally do over the course of business instead of the allocated regular budget. So in essence, you create an underspend by providing a robust amount of carry forward. For instance, this year there's an $18 million carry forward, where last year there was a $29 million carry forward. I'm not arguing one way or the other. I'm trying to understand if we have a $389 million budget that we've now augmented to $408, that is a good thing. Why are we asking units to underspend at a 90% level, and how does that qualify based on the that's my question.
Yeah.
Is I just want to be, because there's been a lot put in print
right. This
week that causes me to be unclear, causes even our conversations earlier in the week to really I want to be really sure, because you know I'm just still trying to fish through this.
So for me, philosophically, and this goes to all the work that we've done as a university during the past 6 years and continue this year, not just on a new budget model, but how it is we've navigated the challenging budget of 19 that we created, 17, 18, and all those difficult decisions. It is prudent and conservative for us to spend at 90 to 92% of actuals without the carry forward built in. And why is that so important? I've said, and I will say again, there is not a huge pot of money hidden somewhere. We have worked to increase days of cash on hand in such a way that our rating from our bond agencies and from our rating agencies does not go down. But when your days on hand decreases, which is what occurred last year when you overspend, you must replenish that. And so I'm inherently conservative in the way in which I think about how we spend money as an institution. It's one of the reasons our debt load has gone down. It's one of the reasons we've underspent budget. And so philosophically, not commingling those one-time dollars with revenue makes perfect sense to me, and it's just part of being disciplined and the maturation process as an organization. And I'm proud of where we've been, and I think we're going to continue that growth. Does it constrain flexibility? Yeah, until you get to the end of the year and hopefully those dollars again get returned to you in a way that's meaningful. And if we can continue to grow, again, the revenue growth must come through enrollment growth.
Last follow-up, I promise. If then, and you made the reference to this, that the board did vote the same way last year to return $29 million in carry, that would augment the previous year's budget in the similar fashion as we do to augment this budget to 408 this year, right? When there was no overspend. If you augment with carry forward and we spent $400.6 million, not based on the original, what, 383.4, if we augment with the $29 million, there was no overspend. Or is that, because my I'm trying to understand, I swear to you all, I'm trying to understand this.
Well, because it gets pulled into,
go ahead.
So, as our president has been really good about this messaging across campus this week, and I guess last week with staff, maybe, there was not an overspend as compared to budget. The overspend was actual revenues as compared to actual expenditures. That was the overspend. So that's why the message, which it can be talked about in many different ways, it's not a budget problem. It's not, you know, we're not overspending a budget. It's looking at actual revenue and actual expenditures.
Okay.
But the other thing, too, is
actually that's a, yeah.
And then the other thing that I want us all to think about, right? And again, this is, so we stop spending one-time dollars on recurring expenses, which is that's the cardinal sin of budget. You just don't do that. So we stop doing that. But then the next thing we stop doing is thinking about carry forward as recurring revenue. It isn't. It's not guaranteed. And so as we, again, mature in how we do this, making sure we don't spend to budget numbers, because that's one number that you see if you look at that in the system. You got to not look at that number. You got to look at the actual number, right? Because that allows you to be conservative in your spending. And then mature organizations never spend 100% of budget because that's not the number you use. They also don't spend 100% of actual because that's a disaster and doesn't give you any flexibility. So 90% of actual revenue spend as the way in which we manage ourselves creates a healthy, well-managed, fiscally sound organization. And it's what you want to see in the corporate world, but it's also what you want to see. It's one of the reasons that we are not having the same conversations that you're seeing in many other places across the country. And so it's because we've been so disciplined. Not we leadership, we faculty, we staff, we budget, all of us in the regions, essentially holding our feet to the fire to not overspend. And so it's good.
Anything else? Any further questions or comments before we go to vote? If not, I entertain a motion and a second to approve the revision to the 23-24 operating budget.
So moved.
Have a motion, have a second.
You have a second from Regent West.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed by like sign. Okay. Action item 4. Approval of personnel actions. Susan?
So these are the standard personnel actions that we bring to the committees on a quarterly basis. The full board will take action on in December. So these are your personnel actions from May 1st through August 31st, and one-time compensation payments from 5/1 through 8/31. So I can take any questions, or there's others in the room that may be able to answer some questions that others may have.
to start here and just say that, as I think many may be aware, Regent Brinkley and I, whenever these come out, we take a lot of questions and comments from members of the campus, and that's how we spend our week, answering individual questions on this about individual people. We both have expressed over the years, this starts my third year on the board, we both have expressed that we do not want to micromanage and get down in the weeds on these. That is not the role of the board as we got done it. We understand the state law that they must be recorded, and it is part of our bylaws, but I this week was reviewing the bylaws and looking to see, and I read this out at Faculty Senate yesterday, that the board shall exercise authority over and control of appointments, qualifications, salaries, and compensation payable out of state treasury. My question to the full board is, you know, in my 3 years here, we have we've gone over Todd Stewart's contract, we've gone over the contracts that come from athletics, usually an executive committee, and we spend a lot of time on those, and yet we don't look at other contracts. And I just wonder if we should, as a board, be looking at perhaps the leadership team, the top management team, those contracts. I don't believe we want to, as a board, get down below perhaps your executive team. But the executive team, do we have a responsibility to be looking at those? And that's just a question for, again, what our authority is and what we should be doing.
So, I want to be clear, the executive team does not have contracts specifically. The only contracts we have at the university are athletics contracts and my contract. We have appointments that are four-year appointments that are renegotiated every 4 years. And so we do bring contracts to the board. We do not bring reappointments to the board. That's my team, my cabinet. And I would encourage you all not to get to the level of approving those. You don't like my cabinet decisions I'm making, take that up with me. And we have had conversations around some of those reappointments, and we're going to continue to have those conversations. I am happy to do that. Getting to the place where you are approving reappointments of deans, vice presidents, general counsel, I think that shifts from a strategic conversation to a tactical conversation, and I would encourage the board not to get to that level of micromanagement. If you have those questions, I'm happy to talk to you all one-on-one, but that's a management decision. That is not a strategic decision for the institution, from my perspective. The other thing I will say, and this is so important, compensation at this institution, I'm proud that we've gotten to 2% regular increases annually. Because when I showed up, I heard over and over again, we don't get regular salary increases. I said, that's wrong. And so we've gotten to a place where the expectation is that each year there'll be a 2% pool. So now the narrative is, well, 2% is not enough. And given the inflation pressures we have, that makes absolute sense. And I said to Faculty Senate, I said to Staff Senate, that is correct. That is not enough. You heard me talk about the legislative work we have to do to get increases to base. That can help us with several things. Inversion, compression, and merit. It can also help us with ensuring we're retaining staff and faculty. But the other thing that I want to say is that we have done some amazing work on the staff side. Regent Brinkley and his organization is a prime example of it. You'll remember from a couple of years ago, thinking differently about how we're deploying staff resources. To this date, using Shane's numbers that he did on it was a big napkin, but it was the back of a napkin, we have made market adjustments to over 500 of our staff, not including athletics. You add to that in staff, you have a pretty high churn rate. So last year, we added 250 new staff to WKU, a total of about 1,600 staff. That means we have done market adjustments for almost 50% of our staff in the past 3 years. For our faculty, it is much more difficult. We do retention offers that were in a similar range as to what some of you may have seen in the leadership offers, ranging from 4% to 17% for a group of 17 to 20 faculty that we were in danger of losing, that we wanted to retain that talent. I heard the comment last night, so the only way I can get a raise is by getting another offer. That is not atypical in higher education. And there are conversations that faculty will have with the department chairs and deans that they may or may not retain folks and make offers. Last thing. If you think about the reduction in force from 2018, the number of staff of the 182 positions that we eliminated, the number of staff was almost 90% of those positions, if I recall the number. The vast majority were staff who lost their jobs and had picked up extra workload. So the reorganization on that side was necessary. On the faculty side, you can't change a faculty member's job responsibility. It's teaching, research, and service. And we have a very strict process on how someone gets promoted from assistant to associate, associate to full. And so as proud as I am, and we should praise and celebrate that we have been creative and nimble on the staff side at thinking differently about how we work and how we become more efficient and more creative, on the faculty side, it's just harder. It's just harder. And so the provost and I have had these conversations. The deans and the provost will continue to have these conversations. How do we think differently about how we deploy those scarce resources in a way that makes us more efficient? I think part of it is around instructional and research and service load. And I think those conversations will continue during the year. At the end of the day, we need to retain the talent that we have. We need to be competitive in the marketplace. And we've worked hard, not just on the side of salary, but on total benefits package. We were going to have an increase in health insurance this year. We have not since 2019. We've added 5 days, particularly for staff, on paid time off, right? We've had summer hours. We have remarkable workplace flexibility. We've done everything outside of salary. And so I appreciate the concern. It's the right question to ask. We're going to get there. My president, colleagues, and I are going to do everything we can with the legislature. But I think that if you look at percentages, I understand dollars are big numbers, but percentages, those are pretty typical.
So I appreciate the answer. And
that's a long answer to all the questions.
Also, just helping to frame this for the community at large as they hit me and say, well, you've got to stop this. Well, okay, that's not the board, but yet it's reported to the board. And it is part of our bylaws, but yet again, there's these levels. Continue to have that conversation. So we have a conversation with you, not necessarily making those changes here. So I appreciate that.
Can I follow up, Regent Brody? I have a question and a comment, and I want to stress that I agree in principle that if we have an $18 million discussion 5 minutes prior to a discussion over 120 or 130,000, one shouldn't be given equal weight. I think it's irresponsible for us to micromanage salaries. Also, to that point, I don't know the responsibility of, as a staff advocate here, as a fiduciary, the responsibility of spending so much time presenting athletic contracts. If we're not going to discuss contracts, and that's a function of especially contracts that have no salary increase at all, which we've seen athletic contracts presented in that fashion. I don't know why those come before the board. If there's a statutory requirement, that's something that should be revisited, in my opinion. If we're not going to have a robust discussion about any staff position other than president, which is the one really focused hiring practice that the board makes, I don't think we ought to have any at all. Now, along with that, I want to stress that, you know, Shane and I, and I only know about Shane because we're in pretty constant communication. Sometimes I think that it's unhealthy. But we do review every page that we're given. And the reason the contract came up, that discussion came up, is that specifically tied to four of these positions in the justification explanation, it does say new contract agreement in the language. So because of that, I want to stress this to everybody. Because it says there's a new contract agreement, I can't support this. I was going to support this, but unless we revise that, and I'll support it in December once it's revised, but it does say the explanation is new contract agreement. If there are no contracts, I don't know that we can even vote on it.
Yeah, it's imprecise language. We can make Can we make the revision?
Well, we can make a revision now.
Make the revision now.
Yeah. But that is the explanation. That's where the contract language came up, and that's where we also thought, well, why are some contracts discussed and others are not? So I'm sure it was an accidental oversight.
And I have a question, not in your parliamentarian's role, Andrea Anderson, but as general counsel. Is there a statutory requirement for contract approval by the board that's different from reappointment?
There's language specific to contracts.
I can't hear you.
There's language in the statute specific to contracts when it talks about quorum of the board, but it does not reference letters of appointment. I think the document that you're looking at is created by HR, and they have certain fields that they populate. So I think that's the distinction in why it says contract.
Yeah, yeah. When it's that was just that's a good catch, David, because we actually have talked about it, that we knew that the reappointments had to go to the board because they were not contracts. So
yeah,
I apologize for that misstatement.
No, this prompted a line of discussion that we had not that I had never seen and I had not been a part of in the last 5.5 years. So I think this healthy discussion. And is a good. It helps people understand that there are not, in fact, contracts on these positions. So there's nothing being hidden.
Right. So can we make the correction now, or do we have to wait till December?
Andrew can make a motion to revise that language.
So would it be reappointment language? Okay.
Yes.
All right. I can. Okay. Chair Brody, do you mind if I make a motion with revised language?
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't pick up what Andrew was saying, so please do. I do think it's good that it got out on the table and was clarified some, but please go ahead and make the motion.
Want to move a modification of the language in MV4 to restructure words related to 4 specific explanations for salary increases of greater than $5,000. The language currently for 4 individuals on that explanation page states that there are new contract agreements. In fact, those are reappointments. That is the new justification language that I'd like to insert as part of my motion, and in doing so would also move the acceptance of these personnel actions for FB4.
We need to take them separately, please.
Okay. I want to move that we do everything that I just said with the exception of accept FB4.
I'll second that.
Are the people voting clear on the motion?
The motion, as I understand that I presented it, Chair Brody, is to modify language on 4 instances on the explanation page where it specifically words new contract agreement, to modify that to reappointment.
And you have a motion and a second.
Yes, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed by like sign. Now I understand there's another motion on particular salaries. Is that correct?
No, there's a move. There's a motion. Motion to move on. Sorry, so moved on FB4.
Yes, on FB4, the personnel actions.
Yes.
So, all right. I'll accept the motion and a second there.
So moved.
Have a second.
Jane.
Regent West.
Okay, thank you. I can't see or hear you. So, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed by like sign. All right, moving on to the last action item in finance, the approval of revisions to the WKU internal audit charter. Turn it over to Bruce Wiseman.
Stay there. I've got a proposal in your packet to revise the internal audit charter. I will tell you, we did this as a practice, preparing for our external quarterly review next summer. We took the existing charter and we compared it to the model charter of our professional standards, and we made some changes. I'll tell you the substance of those changes were very minimal, but you'll see the document looks a little bit different than the existing one. So with that, I'll take questions if there are any.
Any questions or comments? If not, thank you, Bruce. I'd entertain a motion that the provisions to the WKU Internal Audit Charter be approved.
Yeah. So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Now for information items, the quarterly financial statements for the first quarter of fiscal year 24, Susan?
Yeah, just going to pull my slide deck back up, I believe. Okay. So let me just go through this. So this is first ever quarterly financial statements for our university. They've never been produced in the past, and so here we go. Let me just. So you'll see that there's only 1 year presented in these quarterly financial statements. As the auditing firm talked about, there's no comparative year. The reason there's no comparative data for this is because this is the first ever quarterly interim statement we have presented. We will have comparative data, so starting at this time next year, you will see 2 years side by side. This is information only. There's no action required. And just so everyone understands the components of the quarterly financial statement, you basically have a balance sheet or a statement of net position. And this is an accumulation of assets and liabilities over time, whereas your income statement is basically a snapshot at any point in time. It represents one full quarter of your revenue and your expenses. They will always be, these interim quarterly statements will always be unaudited, since we only have the auditors on campus once a year to do a financial audit. And so I just want everyone to understand these are unaudited statements. This is really our attempt, working with Chair Brody, on getting a more robust financial package for the board. You have your budget versus actual, which of course brought up a question that Regent Brinkley, is that there wasn't an overspend then. So if you just look at budget versus actual, you don't have the actual to actual comparison. So your statements will help you do that more. We're also working with Chair Brody on some more graphics and net position and cash position that we can present quarterly to the. I think there will be a more robust and more informational than just a simple budget versus actual. So again, this is your first quarter, and this is a statement of net position, your balance sheet. So your since we don't have first quarter statements again from prior year, if you just look at how we ended the year, June of 23, and you look at the ending of the first quarter, our cash equivalents and investments have declined about $6.2 million. Some of that is due to outstanding tuition collections, because tuition collections are still going on after the end of the first quarter, so you'll see cash increase. Capital project spend that we will be getting reimbursed from the state, you see a decline there, and then just regular debt service payments that occur in the first quarter that's not reflected at the end of the year. Accounts receivable is higher, because that goes along with what we were talking about, is that we're booking receivables for those outstanding tuition payments that we have not received. And then your long-term obligations have declined because we paid off those debt service payments. So that's just kind of a snapshot of your statement of net position. Again, Next year when I present these, you'll have 2 years comparison, so there'll be more to work with because you can compare this quarter to the prior year. And this is, again, accountants, they like to give these long names. So statements of revenue, expenses, and changes in that position, which in most people, that's just an income statement. And so these are your revenues. Operating revenues, we've collected in the first quarter $57 million, and that includes most of the fall tuition revenue and a portion of the summer. Operating expenses of about $100 million. Non-operating revenues, that's primarily your state appropriation and your grants and contracts through September of about $54.5 million. Increase in net position at this point is, again, positive, of about $11.4 million. Now, and we've had a long conversation with Chair Brody about this, about the pension and OPIB assumptions. That is a number that we get from the state based on actuarial work that they do at the state from the pension board once a year. Some state institutions that are in the pension system do a five-year rolling average, do an average, and put an adjustment in their quarterly. And like I said, Chair Brody and I have talked about this in length, and it just, you just never know where that pension adjustment is going to land at the end of the year until you get it. So at this point, until maybe Gary and I have some additional conversations, we're just keeping it out of the quarterly statements because it could swing greatly by the end of the year, dependent on interest rates and the number of people that enter and leave the pension system. So I think that I do want to, again, I've got to congratulate the financial staff on this because I know this was a heavy lift. And the reason it's a heavy lift is it's something new that we've never done. And then secondly, most institutions would use software to generate these, which makes the process a whole lot easier. Because that software is a little expensive and we don't need to be spending money on software right now, they actually generated these on their own. So that's, it was a heavy lift for them, so I appreciate the work. So thank you, Ronaldo, Christy, and good work on that. So any questions, Chair Brody? I can take
them. Susan, I'd just like to echo what you said. I commend you and your staff for doing that. For being an accountant in a prior life, seeing financial statements like this on a quarterly basis, I think will help us. It'll take a while to get everybody accustomed to it, but I think it's a very positive move. And again, thank you. Any other questions or comments? If not, we'll move to our last information item, the quarterly internal audit report. Bruce?
Thank you, Gary. As we get these slides pulled up, this is just a quick update. Every time I talk with you all, I like to share four different pieces of the pie here. Project updates, hotline updates, other updates, and looking ahead, what's coming down the pipeline. So real quick, in the project update file, we've completed a review of the fiscal year 23 president's travel and entertainment expenses that's required by his contract. Wanted to say in your materials there's two low-risk items that we found. They are not indicative of process concerns, but rather one-off incidents that we found during our audit. So wanted to really thank the president and Susan who approved the expenses. For having good processes in place and as I said last time, a culture of doing the right thing, of reporting expenses in line with policy and state guidelines. We've got a few projects in progress. We're wrapping up undergraduate admissions, so we'll have that to report to you all next time. We have two other projects in process purchasing where we're honing in on personal service contracts, RFPs, and our internal approval workflow that we have at Western. And then finally, we'll do the special license plate review where we get some money from the state and we use that to fund scholarships. And we just confirmed that
all the money we got, we applied to scholarships.
So that's an update on all of the projects we've got completed and in progress. In the hotline, to date, calendar year to date, we've received 4 cases through the hotline. 3 have been closed. We have 1 in process right now that we're working on. And as you can see at the bottom, we've had 1 closed since we last met. There's not much to talk about on that one. We looked into the alleged misconduct that was there, and then we worked with leadership to confirm the facts of the case and take the actions necessary. I'll continue to remind everybody, if you see something, please say something. Reach out to me personally if you would like. My email and phone number's up there. If you want to be anonymous, the hotline information is there as well. Other updates. So team development, we've got a lot of activity there. I would like to introduce to the board our new senior auditor, Caitlin Durham. She's a Western Kentucky alum. She's got a 2 bachelor's degrees, 1 in finance, 1 in economics, and she liked Western so much, she stayed and got a master's in applied economics. So after she graduated, she left. She did a little work in banking and the retail grocery industry. And then when we posted this position, she said, hey, I loved Western so much as a student, I'm going to come back and work. So Caitlin, welcome to the team. And I look forward to all of you meeting and working with her more in the future. In addition, we are reviewing resumes and conducting interviews for our student intern position. I'm real excited on what this could bring to our office and some of the work that it can do, as well as an educational experience for the students, getting some real life experience there. Finally, on this slide, we've got the increased campus awareness. When I got here, the president said, make sure everyone knows you're here and what you do and why you do it. So we've been getting out and doing that work. I'd like to thank the communications team that did a great article out there and put a picture out there for people to know who we are. And we actually got to talk with the Faculty Senate Budget and Finance Committee. And that was a great discussion that we had with all of them. So thank you for the invite, Regent Spiller, on that one. All right, other updates. Consultations. And that's a simple word, and it means a lot of different things. So since June, we've done 13 consultations. And I tell folks, what is a consultation? And I've defined it very broadly for our office. And that is when someone from the university community calls us and talks to us. They may ask us a question. They may ask us to review a process. They may be thinking about changing a process. They may want us to sit on a committee. It could be a whole host of things. But the point is, they reached out to us. They know that we're here. They know that we're a resource. And so that's one of the key metrics we wanted to track this year, people reaching out, knowing that we're here, and we're building that relationship. We're growing here at the university. 13 since June, and we've had 7 in fiscal year 24 so far. Our goal for the year is 25. So if you're doing the math at home, we're right on track. And I'll advertise those services to anyone sitting around the periphery. You know, hey, give us a call if you need to talk about anything. We'd love to help out. The middle section there, thank you all for approving the charter. We got that one done. And then some contributions to the profession. I volunteered to help out with an external review at East Tennessee State University to review their audit team. And are they conforming with the professional standards? It was a great opportunity to learn some best practices, bring some things back here to Western Kentucky. And it's also important for us to do that because we're going to ask people to come and volunteer and do ours next summer. So as Regent Brody asked me, it's not going to be the same people, as if it's not some quid pro quo. There's none of that. But it's important to do that. Put that out there and you get things back. And then finally, I presented at a professional conference, Artificial Intelligence, Ready or Not, Here It Comes. We talked about what's the state of artificial intelligence, what are some of the risks surrounding that, and what are some opportunities that you could capitalize in the higher ed industry with AI. Real quick, looking ahead, we're working on our quality assurance and improvement program. That's that external review that we're going to do next summer. It's required every 5 years by our professional standards. The last time we had it done was 2019. Add 5 years to that, we're in 2024. So we're looking ahead, and we're going to be ready to do that external review and report back to you the audit results of someone else auditing the auditor. So we get a little bit of our own medicine there. And just as a reminder, we're looking for a rating of generally conform. It's not a super exciting rating, but it's the best you can do. They say you generally conform with the standards. And then finally, we're going to present at the Staff Professional Development Day if we can get a proposal accepted. We love being out there and getting in front of folks and letting them know we're here and what we do. So that's a lot of the work we've been doing and what we're planning to do. Are there any questions from anyone?
Any further questions or comments? Bruce, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Regent Brody, and everyone for your support.
Mr. Chair, that concludes the Finance and Budget section of today's meeting.
Very good. Thank you, Regent Brody. We have been here a little over 2 hours, so let's take a 10-minute break.